Picture this. You are embroiled in a neighborhood dispute, right? But instead of, I don't know, bickering over a property line or a noisy dog, your neighbor hands you a stack of legal documents.
Yeah, which is terrifying enough on its own.
Exactly. But this isn't just a manila folder with a few forms. It is a towering physical pile totaling 9,379 pages.
I mean, just to put that in perspective, if you were to actually print that out, you're looking at roughly 19 standard reams of paper.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It would physically weigh around 90 pounds. So it is just a staggering volume of text to drop on a single person.
A literal mountain of legalese.
Mm-hmm.
And that specific nightmare is exactly what we are unpacking today. We're doing a deep dive into a really fascinating recent decision from the Western Australian State Administrative Tribunal, or WASAT.
Right, the Godwin and Keat case, which was decided in early 2025.
That's the one.
Yeah.
And our mission today is to explore what happens when self-represented parties just completely clash.
Yeah.
Like the legal mechanics of weaponizing paperwork and the literal financial cost of wasting someone's time.
Because we are really looking at the boundaries of what a justice system will tolerate here. This case, it perfectly balances the dry mechanics of tribunal law with this very messy human drama of a strata dispute that has just completely jumped the rails.
It really has.
Yeah.
So to understand the massive bill at the center of this case, we have to look at the battle that actually created it. We've got Laureen Godwin, the applicant, who is a property owner within this strata complex.
Right.
And we have Paul Keat, the respondent. He's the director of Strata Asset Services, which is the company managing the property. Now, the primary issue that kicked this whole thing off was Godwin going to the tribunal to prove that Keat's management contract had been terminated. She basically asked the legal authorities to make his firing official.
Right. That was the core question the tribunal was asked to evaluate. But the crucial piece of context here is that Godwin actually lost that initial dispute.
He lost.
Yeah. The tribunal examined the evidence and ruled that the strata manager's contract had not been terminated. So Keat and his company were, legally speaking, still the managers.
But of course, the story doesn't end with her losing, which brings us to the actual conflict we're looking at today. Keat is striking back. He applied to the tribunal, demanding that Godwin pay him for the expenses and the loss of time he suffered while having to defend himself against her application.
And Godwin is predictably furious about this.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
She filed documents calling his claim, quote, excessively extravagant, unreasonable, and outrageous.
Well, the environment surrounding this whole strata was already highly contentious, you know. The tribunal documents note there's this long-standing building dispute in the background. And look, Godwin had a legal right to challenge the contract if she genuinely believed it was invalid.
Sure, absolutely.
But Keat, who was operating a business, had an equal right to protect his commercial interests and defend his position. I mean, he was compelled to participate in a process he didn't initiate, and now he wants to be compensated for the resources that participation consumed.
It makes me think of, like, throwing a massive mandatory party, forcing someone to attend under threat of legal default, and then they turn around and hand you an invoice for the hours they spent just standing in your living room.
Yeah, that visual captures the dynamic perfectly. He didn't want to be there, but the legal system demanded his presence.
But before we look at Godwin's reaction to this, I'm honestly stuck on a basic premise here. Can a self-represented person even charge for their time in the first place? I always operated under the assumption that you only got legal fees covered if you actually hired a lawyer and had a formal bill from a law firm.
That's a really common misconception. The baseline rule for this specific venue under Section 87 sub 1 of the State Administrative Tribunal Act of 2004 is that parties usually bear their own costs.
Okay, so you pay for yourself.
Right. Tribunals are designed to be more accessible than formal courts. The default is that everyone pays their own way, so you don't terrify regular people out of bringing legitimate claims for fear of bankruptcy if they lose.
But where does the law stand on billing for your own time if you don't have a law degree? Because Keat isn't a lawyer.
Right, so the traditional notion here comes from a very famous 1994 High Court case called Caccia v. Haynes. The High Court reasoned that costs in a legal sense historically meant indemnifying a party for professional legal expenses they incurred.
Like actual money out of pocket to a professional.
Exactly. A layperson hasn't incurred a professional expense by spending their weekend reading documents. Your personal time, legally speaking, isn't billed the way a solicitor's time is billed. So generally, a self-represented party cannot recover compensation for the time they spent preparing their case as standard legal costs.
But wait, time is money. Like, if I'm spending hundreds of hours reading 9,000 pages of documents to defend myself, I could have been working. My business could be suffering. The legal system is essentially saying that if you represent yourself to save money, your time is legally viewed as worthless compared to a lawyer's time.
Well, yes, and the law recognizes that rigid adherence to that 1994 precedent can create incredibly unfair outcomes, especially in tribunals where self-representation is super common.
But so there's a loophole.
There is. We find a vital statutory exception in Section 87, Sub 3 of the SAT Act. This section gives the tribunal the discretionary power to order a payment to compensate a party for expenses, loss, inconvenience, or embarrassment resulting from the proceeding.
Wait, inconvenience or embarrassment? That phrasing feels incredibly broad.
It is broad by design. The tribunal looked at past precedents, specifically cases like Spring Mist and Reeks v. Johnson, and those decisions established that the word losses in the statute acts as a specific exception to the Katia v. Haynes rule.
Okay, so it overrides the old rule.
Yeah, in certain contexts, it allows a tribunal to recognize that having to spend hundreds of hours defending yourself is a tangible, compensable loss. It treats the time of a non-lawyer advocate as an actionable inconvenience.
But there has to be a ceiling to that, right? It can't just be a blank check where someone claims they were horribly embarrassed and demands $1 million.
Oh, absolutely. The ceiling is strict. The tribunal referenced another case, known as Lee, which clarified the mechanics of this provision. It is not meant to award damages. You can't, for example, claim you lost hypothetical future business profits because you were distracted by the case.
Got it. So no butterfly effect claims.
Right. The compensation has to be directly tied to the physical inconvenience and the direct loss of participating in the tribunal proceeding itself. The mechanism is purely protective. It's not punitive.
Okay, so Keat has the legal right to ask for compensation for his inconvenience. We need to look at exactly what he is asking for here, because he submitted an invoice for $18,455.89.
Yeah, which is a huge number for a self-represented party.
It is. How on earth does a self-represented strata manager rack up an $18,000 bill just for defending himself? What is actually on this invoice?
Well, Key broke his claim down into three distinct categories. So the first is time. He claimed $16,687.50.
Just for his time.
Just for his time. He arrived at that number by claiming 133.5 hours of work, which averages out to about 15 hours a month over the 9 months this dispute dragged on.
Okay.
And he billed his own time out at an hourly rate of $125. He argued that it took that many hours because he had to read and analyze the 9,379 pages of documents that Godwin filed.
Wait, he just picked a number? He's billing himself out at $125 an hour to read paperwork. We just established he's not a lawyer.
Exactly. No. And we'll get back to how the tribunal handles that math in a moment, but you want to hear the other categories first.
Yeah, what else is on there?
The second category was printing. He claimed $1,650, stating he had to physically print 7,500 of those pages, and he calculated the cost at 22 cents a page.
That's a lot of printer ink.
It is. And the final category was parking. He claimed $118.39 for parking his car while attending hearings at the tribunal over 4 separate days.
Okay, so Godwin isn't taking this massive bill lying down. She mounted a defense against paying it, starting with the argument that Keat didn't truly win the overarching war, even if the tribunal ruled his contract was valid.
Right, she tried to recontextualize the victory.
Yeah, she pointed out the tribunal noted the Strata Council had been improperly constituted twice in previous years, so she's trying to muddy the waters on his competency.
She also directly attacks that hourly rate you question. She argued he isn't a legal professional, so inventing an hourly rate of $125 is improper. She suggested that calculating his daily wage rate as a standard strata manager would be a more honest reflection of his time.
Which is a fair point. She also pointed out something deeply relatable from the hearing transcripts. She claimed Keat admitted on the record that he didn't even read all 9,000 plus pages.
I mean, who could blame him?
Right. But if we are talking about legal mechanics, if you are billing for 133 hours spent reading documents, the burden is on you to prove you actually read them.
Right. Godwin's core defense was attempting to relitigate the surrounding circumstances to show Keat wasn't blameless. And she argued that forcing her to pay this bill would add an unfair financial burden on all the strata owners.
But looking at the timeline of events, Godwin's behavior really looks like a deliberate strategy. It's the legal equivalent of filibustering by paperwork. She didn't just submit evidence. She filed irrelevant documents, requested numerous urgent directions hearings, sought an interim injunction against a third party that was dismissed.
It was a whole mess.
And sought another urgent injunction against Keat that she later just withdrew.
And those specific legal maneuvers are highly disruptive. A directions hearing is basically a procedural meeting. If you file for an urgent directions hearing, you are forcing the tribunal members and the opposing party to drop everything, schedule a hearing, and show up immediately.
Usually over something tiny.
Exactly. Usually over a minor scheduling or administrative issue. It completely derails the actual progress of the case. And an interim injunction is an attempt to legally force someone to stop doing something temporarily before the trial even happens. Filing and withdrawing these motions constantly forces the other side to prepare defenses for trials that never even occur.
Yeah, and she also managed to stretch what was scheduled as a one-day final hearing into 3.5 days.
Which is wild. Spending 3.5 days in a tribunal for a single issue, whether a management contract was terminated, is highly unusual. It points to a massive amount of cross-examination or presentation of evidence that the tribunal ultimately deemed entirely irrelevant to the core question.
It really seems like a strategy of burying your opponent in so much friction and text that they just give up. It raises a serious question about what the tribunal is actually built to do and how they handle someone actively jamming the gears.
Well, under Section 9 of the SAT Act, the tribunal has specific statutory objectives. They are legally mandated to resolve disputes fairly, according to the substantial merits of the case, speedily, and with as little formality and technicality as possible.
Speedy and informal.
Right. And they must do all of this in a way that minimizes costs to the parties.
Speedy and with minimal cost. 9,000 pages and surprise urgent hearings are the exact opposite of that mandate.
Precisely. The tribunal found that Godwin's actions directly impaired every single one of those statutory objectives. She unnecessarily prolonged the hearing and burdened the respondent. So the tribunal member, Mrs. R. Petrucci, had to calculate the financial consequence for that behavior.
So let's look at how the tribunal actually calculates the punishment for paperbombing an opponent. We left off with Key claiming his time was worth $125 an hour. How does the tribunal evaluate that number? Do they look at market rates for strata managers?
Not exactly. The tribunal looked at the Legal Profession Determination 2024, which sets the official guidelines for lawyer rates in Western Australia. Under that scale, the absolute minimum rate for a junior clerk or paralegal is $187 an hour, scaling up to $484 for a senior lawyer.
Okay, so Keat probably thought he was giving him the deal.
Exactly. Keat, asking for $125, likely thought he was presenting a highly reasonable discounted rate.
But again, he isn't a lawyer or a legal clerk.
Which is exactly why the tribunal held firm on the Caccia v. Haynes principle we talked about earlier. Because Keat is not a lawyer, he cannot rely on the legal profession scale. It simply does not apply to him. Furthermore, the tribunal noted a failure in evidence.
What do you mean?
Keat failed to provide any substantial proof to justify why his specific time, operating his specific business, should be valued at exactly $125 an hour for the purpose of tribunal preparation.
Okay, so without a justified hourly rate, what do they do?
Okay.
Because the tribunal employs a mechanism they call the broad brush approach, right?
Yes, the broad brush approach.
They explicitly state they do not attempt mathematical precision when awarding compensation for inconvenience. It's a matter of overall impression. And based on that impression, they slashed Keat's rate from $125 down to a nominal $25 per hour.
It is a massive reduction that fundamentally alters the payout.
It's hard to wrap your head around. The tribunal explicitly acknowledges that Godwin's behavior was a massive time-wasting burden. They document her filing irrelevant paperwork and dragging hearings out for days. But then they value the time of a professional business director at an entry-level retail wage of $25 an hour.
Yeah, it feels like a disconnect.
They keep the 133.5 hours he claimed. But at that new rate, the compensation drops from over $16,000 down to roughly $3,300. It almost feels like the tribunal is agreeing he was wronged, but barely compensating him for it.
It is a tension at the heart of administrative law, for sure. The tribunal's mechanism for awarding costs under Section 87 sub 3 is compensatory. It's not punitive. They cannot use the hourly rate to teach Godwin a lesson for her bad behavior. Their job isn't to fine her. Their job is to compensate Keat for a baseline level of inconvenience.
So it's less about evaluating his professional resume and more like an insurance adjuster totaling a 10-year-old car.
What do you mean?
Like, the adjuster isn't looking at the emotional value you placed on the vehicle or how much you paid for the custom aftermarket stereo you installed. They are applying a rigid, standardized metric to compensate for a baseline loss, removing all emotion and individual circumstances from the math.
That is an excellent way to conceptualize the broad brush approach. The tribunal removes emotion from the math. Keat had the burden of proof. He had the opportunity to prove his specific business lost $1.25 an hour by him being distracted by this case, and he failed to substantiate that to the tribunal's satisfaction.
Right.
So, recognizing he did suffer a tangible loss of time, the tribunal applies a safe nominal rate. It's not an assessment of his worth in the free market. It's a statutory acknowledgement of inconvenience.
And that burden of proof also delivers a harsh lesson when we look at the other two categories on Keat's invoice, sure, the printing and the parking. Keat claimed $1,650 for printing 7,500 pages. He pointed to a legal cost report indicating that document copies generally cost between 16 and 22 cents a page.
Which is standard.
Right. And reading 9,000 pages on a computer screen is unreasonable. Printing them out makes total logical sense. But the tribunal completely denied the $1,650 claim.
They denied it entirely because Keat did not provide a single receipt. The legal mechanism here is strict. You can have the most compelling narrative in the world. The tribunal can even agree that your expense was likely necessary and logical. But without tangible proof of the actual financial loss, you suffered like a receipt showing money left your bank account. Their hands are tied.
Which makes the contrast with his parking claim so interesting. He claimed $118.39 for parking over the 4 days of hearings. The tribunal approved that amount in full. Why? Because he kept the four parking invoices.
Exactly. The law operates on evidence. A logical assumption that printing costs money is not evidence. A crumpled parking stub is evidence. Failing to keep a printing receipt cost him over $1,000, but keeping that little paper stub secured his parking reimbursement.
Tallying up the final math based on the tribunal's decisions, we have $3,337.50 for his time at the adjusted $25 hourly rate. We add the $118.39 for his parking. The printing claim is zero. That brings the total to $3,455.89.
Right.
And the tribunal, staying true to their broad-brush philosophy, rounded the entire figure down to a clean $3,000. They ordered Godwin to pay Keat $3,000 within 30 days.
I mean, he asked for over $18,000 and walked away with $3,000. It's an outcome where both parties received a severe reality check regarding how the legal system functions.
There are a few major takeaways from this saga for anyone navigating a legal dispute. The system absolutely allows you to represent yourself, and there are mechanisms in place to compensate you for your inconvenience if the other party acts in bad faith. But you cannot use the tribunal system to bury an opponent in irrelevant paperwork without facing financial consequences. Godwin's strategy of filing mountains of documents and extending hearings ultimately cost her $3,000.
And for anyone defending themselves, the ultimate lesson is rigorous documentation. A tribunal is not a venue for estimates, assumptions, or just picking an hourly rate that feels right to you. If you want to be reimbursed for a loss or an expense, you carry the burden of proof. As we saw with the printing bill, forgetting that mechanism is incredibly costly. Keep your receipts. Prove your hourly rate with business records. Do not assume a judge or tribunal member will just take your word for it, regardless of how much they sympathize with your situation.
Before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, building on what we've discussed today. We focused heavily on the physical reality of 9,379 pages of documents. It took a human being, Lorraine Godwin, a significant amount of time and effort to compile, type, and file all of that text. It was a manual effort of disruption.
It was a massive undertaking just to generate the friction.
Exactly. But we are living in an era right now where digital technology and generative AI make creating 10,000 pages of text easier than ever before. It takes a few keystrokes and 10 seconds to generate a mountain of plausible-sounding legal arguments, endless procedural complaints, and customized legal demands.
The barrier to entry for generating legal text has basically dropped to zero.
Right. So are legal systems actually equipped to handle this incoming era of automated paperwork warfare? If creating a 10,000-page document takes seconds, but reading, analyzing, and responding to it still takes a human being months of their life, the foundational machinery of the legal system will break.
It's a huge vulnerability.
Will tribunals like Wasat eventually be forced to institute strict absolute page limits and word counts just to keep the ways of justice turning? Or are we heading toward a reality where AI has to be deployed by the courts just to read and summarize the AI-generated filings of the litigants? In a world where text is infinite and free, human attention becomes the ultimate vulnerability in the justice system. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.